David Katz.
Hi.
Hey there, sir. Please, please have a seat.
Big room.
Hi, guys.
Hello. David.
Hi.
Hi. Hi.
How are you?
How are you?
Hi.
Oh, chairs are slipping. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
What did we do?
You made a movie.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So long ago. Forgot all about it. Yeah.
So there are fans of the book, fans of the miniseries. I mean, yeah. So there are people,
we're both. Yeah. We're fans of the book and fans of the miniseries.
People already have this idea in their head of what it should be, what it should look like, and then coming up with this new version. Did you have any pressure about, you know?
Yeah, there was pressure.
And Stephen King. I mean, Seth and I are massive fans, and I think, you know, for us, getting his stamp of approval was extremely important. And we essentially did, but for us, it was extremely important to get this movie right and keep the integrity of the book, and you know, for us that meant breaking it into, you know, two separate films essentially, and yeah, I mean we sent Mr. King an early cut of the film not too long ago, and he wrote a nice email to Andy and tweeted out to his fans and everything, and I think for us
that was the best day of the project.
of our lives.
We've been on this movie for over 6 years. Wow. And so, you know, when we first came onto it, like David said, we're both big King fans. I grew up 11, 12 reading Stephen King books, and you know, I read this book in the summer of 1989 when I was 13, like the kids so for me it was absolutely doubly special watching those kids portraying 13-year-olds in a small New England town. That was my life. I grew up in a small New England town. In 1989, I was 13 years old. I remember, like, you know, talking to Andy about, well, what movie should be on the marquee? You know, Batman, Lethal Weapon 2, boom, boom. Oh, they're both Warner Brothers movies, so that's even easier. when we first came on, like, you feel the pressure of, you know, the fact that this book is one of the most iconic works by one of the most iconic writers of our time, and for me, the guy who made me want to write books, plain and simple. And so, yes, there was pressure.
There's a beloved miniseries too, which was also, you know.
So right, and of course, so you know you're going to have to honor and not, you know, get close to the Tim Curry performance, which we all remember. I remember that in '90. I'd never seen anything like that on TV. It scared the hell out of me. Horrifying, but also, like, that's an iconic performance, and that's Pennywise in people's minds. So how do you do that? How do you, you know, take this 1,100 plus page tome and adapt it into something that feels seminal and timeless? And that was the big challenge, and that was the challenge of the 6 years working on the movie. And I feel pretty good about the results. You know, I mean, we worked hard on it, and you know, famously there were stops and starts along the way, but you know, I think now that we're less than 2 weeks out, I feel okay.
That's great. Well, are you sort of secretly excited the fact that Stranger Things came out and was such a huge success?
It's really funny because I think, like, you know, millennials are like, wow, it's just like Stranger Things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not.
Right, for the book was written in
1985. You know, and by the way, you know, the fin of it all was extremely lucky and a
coincidental.
I mean, we didn't know what Stranger Things was. We knew he was in it, and you know, it was going. But you know, we were essentially, you know, I guess we started this 7 years ago.
Right.
So, do I think it's good for our film?
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's what
I mean,
I'm saying.
I think adults will feel the nostalgia, and kids will feel the Stranger Things, and it's not a bad thing. But it is a bummer sometimes for people to, you know, compare us to Stranger Things, and that they believe that Stranger Things came first.
I meant it only as a benefit.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've been the beneficiaries of some interesting lucky breaks on this. You know, the first lucky break is that, you know, the way that the scheduling worked out, we're coming out 27 years after the 1990 miniseries.
Right.
Okay, so we had nothing to do with that. That's just the way it worked. The other lucky break we caught is, you know, when Finn Wolfhard was starting this process, I think he had under 1,000 Instagram followers. By the time we stopped shooting, he had over 1 million. And so, you know, we watched that happen to him over the course of last summer when we were making this. So, yes.
Our third break, I think, and I don't know, officially we weren't involved either, were clowns deciding to terrorize people all over the
right.
state.
And I have to read this. I have to read this statement per Warner Brothers. We are shocked and horrified by the clown pranks, and we have nothing to do with them. Now, like, they didn't have anything to do with them, but at the same time, it was just interesting to watch clowns come back into the culture while we were prepping this movie.
And people were asking us if we had anything to do with this stuff, which of course
I wish we were that smart, but no, unfortunately.
This might be more of a Gary question, but when did it come about that you were going to sort of separate out the adults and the kids' stories?
Very early
on. In the book,
yeah,
it's so intertwined.
We were never, there was never a version
not for us
for this
anyway.
where we could manage to put, you know, 1,200 pages into one movie.
Mm-hmm.
And there were versions of scripts, you know, that we were attempting to try and do this. And, you know, like we said, to keep, you know, the integrity of the book and the story, it made the most sense to split it.
When we came on over 6 years ago, there was a draft that attempted to flash back and forth. You know, you remember they were also trying to get The Stand going at Warner Brothers at the same time. And so, you know, to us, you know, it was evident that you're never going to be able to service these characters and these moments if you try to cram it all into one movie.
Mm-hmm.
Never. And then it's going to be weird if, you know, you're flashing back and forth, which means that, well, what happens if the first movie comes out in tanks, then you just never finish the story, period. That feels weird. To us, the best way to do it was to separate it out. That was a very early decision. And as was the decision to move it up to 89.
There was a lot of thought that went into this. So, I mean, you know, to hear, it is a bummer for us to hear from, you know, some of the huge King fans that they're disappointed that it's two movies and this and that. And, you know,
not
like,
at all.
It was a challenging task. So, you know, and we definitely kept, you know, the man in our minds. So,
what is the current plan for the second part?
Well, you know, we'll tell you when we know. I mean, we are locked and loaded and ready to jump in the minute they say go.
Script is done?
The script is not done, but the script is being worked on. Obviously, all the filmmakers are just, you know, chomping at the bit to get started. And we have a very exciting shape, and Gary's working away. And so, you know, somewhat optimistic that we'll get to make it, but there's been no official decision.
Do you have a dream cast in mind?
By the way, the kids gave their dream cast, and you wouldn't be.
Yeah, I'm sure. Was Ryan Gosling in there?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. You know, of course. That's why we're not letting the kids cast the second movie. It'll be $200 million in actor fees before we have any. You know,
exactly.
Right. So,
how did you come to a bill? Was there a big long list of people?
Long list of people for
everyone. I mean, getting the kids right and getting Pennywise right.
I mean Pennywise, Bill's right, not the
kids. Yeah. Bill's particularly. You know, we saw hundreds of people, and you know, the hundreds of people that read for it. We saw dozens of tapes that made it through, and you know, and it was just for us. What jumped out about Bill was he was clearly going to commit to it. In, you know, a total mind, body, and spirit manner. Like, the things that he can do with his face, with his body, that he showed us even early on, the things that he can do with his voice.
And we have to give a lot of credit to Andy, too, because Andy really pushed him to bring that stuff out of him and his mannerisms and everything.
Andy saw something in him that, you know, it took the rest of us an extra beat to see the way that Andy saw it. But Andy keyed in on him immediately and started focusing in and calling him back and working with him and getting him to a place where it became undeniable. And by the way that the scheduling of the movie worked out, the first month was all kids. You know, Bill didn't really work the first month, but he was in Toronto. He and Andy continued to work on the physicality, on the voice, on the mannerisms, up until the moment we started shooting with him.
One of the coolest things, too, is the kids had not seen him until the first day of shooting. And the first day of that Bill was on set, essentially, was Eddie when he...
The kitchen in Nebo.
Yeah, when he hurts
his arm.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can imagine the day the bus, you know, dropped Bill off, and he walked on a set, and the kids, you know, Bill's already a massive guy, and in the boots and everything, he's even taller. And
he's like 6'5".
It was really cool. It was menacing and frightening for all of us.
And it really took the crew like a full week before we all settled down, because you never know, like, oh, is he not going to be want, you know, not going to want to be talked to, or... you know, is he always going to be Pennywise? Or
it also felt like we were making such a different movie until he came. You know, it just felt like this awesome nostalgia.
We were making Stand By Me.
Yeah.
Having started this whole process so long ago for you guys, what were you excited to maybe flesh out and explore a little more, and what were elements that you knew you just had to stick to?
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of the book, you know, I look, we first went back and watched the 90 miniseries, right, you know, because I hadn't seen it since I was a kid, and what jumps out at you is how much they had to hold back because they were a primetime television special, right? As great as it is, as great as Tim Curry was, the menace, the intensity, even the language, you know, that's so pervasive in all of King's work, was just, you know, restrained by the fact that they were an ABC primetime special. Mm-hmm. So what we, you know, the first thing we knew, it wasn't really about any specific moment in the book as much as two things. We wanted to be truer to the book, and that meant that, you know, we wanted to, you know, delve a little deeper into the moments that, you know, even the miniseries didn't necessarily have time to do. But we wanted to bring the intensity that the ABC miniseries couldn't, just because, you know, by virtue of their being on TV. That was really the... We knew we were going to be rated R from the beginning. And we were supportive the whole way. New Line supported us the whole way. Never urged us to cut to PG-13. They said, all right, you're an R-rated movie starring 13-year-olds. Hmm. Right? And so that gave us, gave Andy, gave, you know, Chase and Carrie and Gary writing the script, that freedom to really explore the darkness of what's going on in Bev's life and, you know, what's going on at school and you know, and to say nothing, of course, of the imagery that we essentially, you know, Andy created that was terrifying. So,
yeah. That opening scene, though, I couldn't.
Poor Georgie, I know.
I know. Well, I couldn't believe it went there. I was like.
It did.
Yeah. What was your relationship like with Andy? Did you guys have to sort of rein him in, or were you more like egging him on?
I will say,
with
Andy, Barbara, the four of us, I mean, you know, we say that the kids had, like, an amazing summer. Those kids became best friends on and off screen.
That was us and Andy and Barbara.
I mean,
yeah.
we were
our own little losers club, the four of us. We were the adult losers club, the four of us, and then the losers club.
It was an extremely challenging shoot. I mean, we were, you know, it was a ton of kids, obviously, and they had to go to school. We were in Toronto in the middle of summer. It was extremely hot. It was extremely humid. And that said, we were like, I think 70% location. So, we were running and gunning, and I mean, we're extremely proud of the way the film looks. You know, even thinking about the schedule that we were shooting, it was nuts.
And sort of philosophically, the way that David and I work as producers, you know, David is a director in his own right and goes off and directs a lot of stuff independently. And I'm a writer in my own right. I go off and write a lot of stuff independently. When we come together, the way that we like to produce is we bring those skill sets there to support the filmmaker. So, you know, if there was an issue on set that, you know, a script thing needed to be looked at or didn't quite make sense on the day, I jump in and Andy and I are working on it. If, you know, light's fading fast and we have to block our way out of a scene, you know, and we're never going to get to come back to this location, David and Andy put their heads together and they go, this. We're just there to support Andy. That's our job.
And that's, by the way, that's the type of movie it was, though. It was all hands on deck.
Yeah.
I mean, it was every day there were challenges.
But Andy was never, not for a second, lost. He came in every day completely locked in on what he had to do, and the previous night he would always draw an extra set of storyboards. You know, he would think about, like, he's a fantastic artist, like, he could be a fine artist, and he would come in with just these pages of storyboards and go, I drew these last night, and then let's just shoot these, and, you know, and we would just proceed to shoot his boards. Like, he was fully in command.
In terms of back to casting Pennywise a little bit, I imagine a lot of the people who came in for that call were kind of trying to do their own version of Tim Curry's Pennywise.
Yeah.
How confident were you guys doing something fully different instead of going for
we knew we weren't going to do Tim Curry.
We couldn't touch. And by the way, you're slightly wrong in that people did come in with very similar takes to the Tim Curry version. I mean, it's definitely was not the direction we were looking to go in, but we were surprised to see, you know, certain auditions that had very similar voices, etc.
The biggest tells were always the New York accent, the weird gruff, like, hiya, Georgie! You know, the minute anyone...
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The minute anyone came in doing this, we're like, all right, next, you know. That's,
No, we couldn't touch Tim Curry, and we knew that. We had to reimagine what our Pennywise was going to look like and sound like. And once again, we have to give Andy a ton of credit for that. But that was always.
You guys catch the Tim Curry tribute?
Yeah, he's in the room.
He's in the room.
He's
in the clown room.
Oh,
yeah.
I missed that one.
Yeah. It's our little Easter egg. We put him in there, yeah.
The drool was really, I think, the best thing.
The Bill drool? Yeah.
Oh,
well, by the way.
Is he really drooling?
Oh, he's really drooling. Just ask Jack Grazer if he's really drooling.
In his mouth.
By the way, that's the first day we shot with Pennywise. It was in the kitchen when he's hovering over Jack, about to bite his face off, and drooling. And this is how great our kids are. When he was drooling on Jack's face, Jack just went and spit right in his face. These kids are not afraid. These kids give as good as they get.
Was there any feedback at all from Mr. King during production?
Well, we kept him in the loop. We were very cognizant of wanting to keep him just, here's where we're at in the process. We're not expecting you to engage. We're not asking you to engage. We just want you to know. You're sort of like laying an offering at the altar and just hoping that, you know, that the great author of the sky, like, sees your offering. We sent him a draft of the script that was pretty close to the shooting draft just to get his blessing, and we received his blessing. And then, as David said, we screened the movie for him.
Yeah, New
Hampshire. And he wrote something on his website, tweeted something, and wrote us an email to the filmmakers.
I don't think there was much communication during the production at all. No.
He didn't want us to visit Ted. His question was, can I wear jeans to the premiere? That was his question. That was it.
Did he?
He's been last approached so many times. Oh, I was going to say, he's been approached, many times to adapt his thing. I mean, does he have like a pat? I mean, you know, is he really very paying attention to each individual?
It doesn't feel that way. It feels like, look, you know, his books speak for themselves, his career speaks for itself. You know, I think it's incumbent on the filmmakers to not screw it up.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, like, as a lifelong Stephen King fan, a person who was inspired to write novels because of Stephen King, the last thing I wanted hanging over me was being part of a bad Stephen King adaptation. That was the motivation throughout the entire 6+ year process.
Can we get an answer to the jeans at the premiere?
when he shows up in jeans, I'll let you know.
We'll be in jeans too. So.
Yes.
Thanks so much.
Thank you guys.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you guys
so much.